This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5HourEnergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Welcome back. We're in studio with Attorney General William Tong. Chris Vandia from Penn Lincoln Strategy is still with us. I mean, we only have a couple minutes here. First of all, thank you for coming in.
We only have a couple minutes? I drove all the way from Stamford.
Yeah, well, you got to deal with it. We in this segment, and then hopefully we'll have plenty of segments moving forward. But I was, you know, you told your story, you know, again, we're still getting to know each other as I'm relatively new in this position. And your immigrant story is a powerful one. I didn't know until I read that piece. I think you were in the Litchfield County at an appearance about the letter,
yeah,
to Nixon. And first of all, did they tell you that Nixon actually read it? Because I'm amazed, like all the millions of people in this country who send correspondence to the White House, and there's all these staffers that handle it. But just for our audience who doesn't know this story, I was wondering if you could just sort of retell it.
So, not far from here. My parents met in a Chinese restaurant on Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield called the Hong Kong Kitchen. And my dad was a cook. My mom was at Hartford Public High. They opened a Chinese restaurant later on Park Street in Hartford and then later in Wethersfield. But my dad was here on a tourist visa, and we think back in the day, a rival Chinese restaurant owner literally dropped a dime on my dad, like in a payphone, right? Old school.
Turned him in.
Yeah, turned him in. The INS agent came. He was a customer, and he said, you know, you've got to go. You've got to self-deport. So my mom and dad planned to pack up this Chinese restaurant and leave. I mean, I wasn't born yet. And so one night, my dad's driving home on the Berlin Turnpike. I think they lived in Newington at the time. And he decided to write a six-page handwritten letter to the President of the United States. He put a stamp on it, put it in the mail, and he thought, that's it. I'm done. I'm cooked. I gotta leave, go to Canada where they came from. Shortly before they were going to voluntarily self-deport, the same INS agent came back and said, the president received your letter and you're welcome to stay in this country. You have to go to the back of the end of the line and wait your turn.
But you can stay while you wait.
You can stay while you wait. And when I was born the first American citizen in my family by right of my birth on American soil, birthright citizenship in Hartford Hospital.
Yeah, we have time for this one too. And again, like I got into a little bit with Chris. I think workforce reduction at the federal level, there's some elements to it I think could have been positive, right? I mean, I want to balance the budget, and I don't like I have a lot of friends who make a lot of money doing not very much in D.C. But this isn't the constant. Constitution, am I not right? I mean, birthright citizenship. I mean, it's.
We can pull it up right now. You know, during the break, the 14th Amendment is very clear. So, if you're a originalist, a textualist, right? If you're Justice Gorsuch,
a strict constructionist,
right? Read the language. If you're born on American soil, you're an American. 14th Amendment. Period. That's the end of the discussion. And it's as if another president. You'll say Democratic president said, you know what? I know what the Second Amendment says, but nobody in America, by executive order, nobody can possess a firearm. Can you imagine what would happen if some president tried to pull that off? That's how illegal this action on birthright citizenship is.
So, I mean, we got to take a break because it gets into this two essential. I want to talk about immigration, and I really want to get into some of your state issues too. But the separation of powers issue is really kind of vital for me. And I guess the question I'll tee you up on for a quick minute here before we get to other elements is that are there active things that the courts have decided that either have to be done or can't be done that aren't being adhered to?
Yes, the federal funding freeze. And so we sued on the second Tuesday of this administration to stop him from freezing all federal funding, from defunding healthcare, defunding education, defunding Medicaid, defunding the police. Let's be clear. That's what Donald Trump is doing. He's defunding the police. He's cutting the FBI in half. What are we supposed to do when we have another terror attack in this country with half the FBI at half its manpower? And so we got a judge to say, you can't do that. You can't freeze all federal funding and defund law enforcement. We have a preliminary injunction, and they are not compliant. I've had to go to court twice to move to enforce this court order. And it's a bit of a game of cat and mouse. As soon as I go to court, they say, what are you talking about, Attorney General? We've opened the payment portal for Medicaid. Medicaid dollars are flowing. As soon as I leave the courthouse, they shut it again.
We have to take a break here, but that's the thing I really want to know. How do you find out whether that stuff's getting funded or not? Like literally, like dollars don't end up in accounts and then
yeah, you have 23 attorneys general doing everything we can. We're all over them. But we're down to the lawyers and judges, folks. Yeah. That's where we are.
I want to get into the why, and we have to take a break. Think about this, and we'll answer it on the other side. Why, according to you and according to the law, they can't stop certain funding? Just I want your answer, but we're going to wait a second here. We're with Attorney General William Tong and Chris Vandia from Penn Lincoln Strategies here. The question I asked is, you know, when it comes to there is separation of powers, but yeah, there does seem to be some leeway in the Constitution for executive power, and you know, especially with maybe personnel. Explain, and if you have to deign to explain to me in more basic terms, why can't the president control funding for certain things?
Checks and balances.
Is it just because checks the House has appropriations and he can't do it?
The spending clause, Article 1 of the United States Constitution, is Congress's power and authority to appropriate and spend money. You know, we talk a lot about separation of powers, rule of law, constitutional crisis. We're in one, by the way. But you know, to be fair, maybe that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot to all of us here in Connecticut and Farmington in our everyday lives. So every middle schooler across Connecticut and across this country knows about checks and balances. And if we don't have checks and balances, we're not free. What do I mean? If the president can do whatever the hell the president wants, then Congress becomes optional, right? You don't really need Congress. You can check in with them every once in a while, but you don't need them. States become optional. Governors, attorneys general, state legislatures become optional. Chris is going to be out of a job if state legislatures are optional. Rights become optional. And then, you know, if you can do whatever you want, you can hurt whoever you want, you can deport whoever you want, you can crush whatever company, whatever university you feel like crushing, you know, because Elon Musk asked you to, then think about what happens to markets and companies and investments. If we live in a chaotic and unpredictable world, how can you run a business that way? How can you be sure that the next day you're not a target? And so look at your 401k today. What are we, 3-4 straight days of declines, 4% in one day? We're in trouble, folks. And just look at your retirement accounts.
So I completely don't want to push back on that because I am a big believer in the separation of powers. And I do believe that some of this has been done in a way that doesn't work legally. And you're the last sort of stand for some of that stuff. But my flip side is that if a president wants to, and again, we don't know the ends, right? We don't know the ends. For me, it would have been great if it was to balance a budget or reduce the debt and deficit. But if a president wanted to significantly impact federal spending, he can't do any of it on his own.
He can do some things on the margins, but no, in large part, he cannot impound funds.
So he would have to go.
That's against the law, period. The Impoundment Act says he can't impound funds and Article 1, the spending clause of the United States Constitution. It's not a regulation. It's not a statute. It's the Constitution. It's Congress's power. The president structurally, frankly, is weak compared to Congress, right? That's the way the founders wanted
but
it.
But presidential power has been increasing with every term.
Yeah. And you know, according to some on the far right, there's this whole theory about the unitary executive that he can do whatever he wants. That's just wrong and not true and dangerous. And it's against the law. If he wants to alter federal spending, he's got to go through Congress. And he can't go out there and punish us by cutting off funding for special education and cutting off funding again for the FBI and for the police and for food share here in Connecticut. An $800,000 cut for Connecticut food share. That's food in people's mouths here in Connecticut today.
That's a proud client of mine, and we're working on it.
There you go.
General, before you got on, Brian and I were talking about what this means in Connecticut, because what you're talking about is certainly concerning at the federal level. But to your point a minute ago, here we're sitting in Farmington, Connecticut, but a middle schooler going to school in Norwich, high schooler going to school in Enfield. What is all this noise in Washington, D.C.? How does it play here in Connecticut? What does it mean for the person in their car right now driving to work who hears what you're saying? And sure, that's a problem, but I don't, you know, when am I going to see that hit me? Pocketbook is a good point. But outside of the pocketbook and my 401k, the day-to-day issues that we're talking about at the legislature right now, where I see you there, you know, every other day. What does this all mean here?
Frankly, if you're focused on your 401k and your retirement, God bless, because you made some good decisions and maybe you're in better shape than many people. If you depend on Medicaid, Medicare, if you're banking on that Social Security check, if you need special education for your kid, if they have an IEP, this impacts them directly right now, today. That money is either paused or it's gone or it's going. And one of the things that I've raised my hand to do is to take the lead among the states to protect Social Security. I'm in part inspired by John Larson because he is a national leader on the issue. But, you know, state attorneys general, we figure out who's going to do what because we can't all do everything ourselves. And Connecticut is going to lead on Social Security. And you've got this unelected billionaire, Elon Musk, calling Social Security a Ponzi scheme, the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. They're gutting the agency so that they can't deliver checks on time. And the former commissioner of the Social Security Administration, Martin O'Malley, has said that he thinks the system could crash in the next 60 to 90 days.
So, you know, my pushback would be this. Now, you're the attorney general of the state of Connecticut. We're not going to talk today about whether or not you want to run for governor. That's a conversation for a different day. But, you know, my thing is we have two extremes. We have the initial what President Trump is doing to and again, if you were trying to balance the budget, I'd feel differently, to the other extreme, which is basically we spend so much money. We're on a path to ruin. I mean, and I'm a big debt and deficit guy. I saw what the housing did. I was working in financial news in 2008, and I saw what happened. Eventually, our debt will kill us as a nation. But we need to find a way to spend less and figure this out. And that's going to hurt, right? Everybody knows you can't meaningfully reduce the debt and deficit without some entitlement impingement.
Yeah, and one of the drivers of federal spending is defense spending. We can all agree on that, right?
Yeah, but they've even said they're going to audit.
So let's just say Hegseth says tomorrow, we're not going to build any more subs and we're not going to buy any more Blackhawks. What does that do to Connecticut?
It crushes us.
We're dead, Brian. We are dead.
So what do we?
Boat shuts its doors and Sikorsky and Pratt shut their doors, we are toast, okay? And the reason why we have laws is so that Hegseth can't just go in there and do that. When Congress has made the decision and Electric Boat has hired tens of thousands of people in reliance on that decision and our economy depends on that decision, We need the predictability of a president and administration who follows the law.
And I get it. But what, I mean, my point is, what do you do when you know we're on a road to ruin? Now, that's an extreme response, right? But, and we have to take another break, but then I'm going to have to tease it out in good radio land. You got to answer that for me, because if I told you that and I believe it's true, it's not like a climate argument like, well, why didn't the world come to an end in 2000 when the clouds were but my point is like at some point it's going to be a problem that we cannot manage, whether it's debt to GDP or China owning too much of our debt or whatever. We're going to go to Morgan Cunningham here, but what I want an answer to is that if you were charged with a mandate that we had to reduce the debt and deficit by a meaningful amount, how would you do that? We're back here with Attorney General William Tong and Chris Vandyhoof from Penn Lincoln Strategies. I want to answer that question, then I do want to get into some Connecticut stuff. But do you agree that this nation is in a fiscal crisis?
Look, I'm the Attorney General, and
right,
so
but you can't comment on one side.
Do I think that we spend too much money as a country? Yes. Am I worried about trillions of dollars in debt? Of course I am. I'm an American. But what Elon Musk is doing and what the president is doing is really not about waste, fraud, and abuse. It's ideological. You know, I was in federal court in New York on our first DOGE case. I refuse to say the word because that's his crypto coin. So I'm not going to do any free marketing for him. But on the first DOGE case, we went to court and we put the Department of Justice to their proof and said, tell us what this is really about. And they admitted that they're not going into to cut waste, fraud, and abuse. They're going into identify spending that doesn't meet ideological criteria that Elon doesn't like.
Okay.
And by the way, and if you were really about waste, fraud, and abuse, you wouldn't fire all the watchdogs and all of the inspectors general who watch over waste, fraud, and abuse.
But you're still not answering my question, which is how do you approach –
you go through Congress is the answer. That's what the law says, and that's what the law requires, and you can't break the law because you don't like it.
Well, what if you...
That's the end of it. That's the discussion.
Well, I mean, Congress doesn't do anything. Like, they don't pass anything.
Okay.
They can hardly keep the government open.
Guess whose fault that is?
Right, so I guess...
That's our fault.
One approach could be like, I'm going to push the envelope and see if the courts stop me or not. Like, I agree, like, the unchecked power thing worries me. But I'm worried about the finances. I don't disagree with their goals and ends. I'm not saying you're wrong on that. I'm just saying that... I want to see this is the hard part for me. I'd like to see something different tried.
But
I don't think that
you want to see someone try breaking the law and bulldozing the Constitution. Is that what we're talking about here?
No, it's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this is my conflict because I think that their ends are not the ends that would justify any movement to push the envelope, which is to balance the budget and reduce the debt.
Can I put this in perspective, though? This is not an academic conversation, right? We can have fun with this conversation for hours.
You're smarter than me, but that's fine.
No. We won't get into that. This is not an academic, you know, theoretical conversation. People are getting hurt right now.
Yes.
People are losing their jobs at nonprofits in Connecticut right now that depend on federal funding, for example. Okay. And that means that a mom or a dad can't pay the mortgage.
I get it.
Even people that do okay. Like, let's just agree that you and I do okay. Many people who do okay live 30, 60 days out. And after, you know, a couple months, you're in deep trouble.
Totally. I had this conversation yesterday that, you know, I have security of my wife's position at her school. But if I lost my job today, I couldn't pay for my kid's school. Like, I just could not do it.
Neither could I.
But I guess my conflict isn't that I support the way they're doing it or what they're doing. My point is that I'm trying to figure out a way. There's no way to get this country to better fiscal.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things. Like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Fiscal position that doesn't have some pain. Now, this is... That to me is as factual as the stuff you're talking about.
What I would say is, and this is the problem with this president and others like him who don't have any experience in government, don't have any real relationships, don't know how it works. They don't know how to move the levers, right? He has so much control and power over Johnson, over Thune, over the House and Senate right now. Sit those guys down, put together a real plan that's lawful, that's compliant with the Constitution, and then move forward.
Yep. Got it. William Tong, the Attorney General, joining us here, and is along with Chris Vandyhoof from Penn Lincoln Strategies. We had a really healthy conversation off mic about phones in schools.
Yeah.
And I believe that having the ability to be on social media and other distractions is horrible for our kids. Can you give us any insight into what's going on today?
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about a couple of proposals. One, Jen Leeper, who's the education chair, is pushing a proposal to make sure that every school district has a plan to deal with cell phones and devices in the classroom. I think most parents, they're getting a little older now, 19, 16, 13. It's hard for me to say that I have adult child. But I have my two devices in front of me, and it's hard for me not to look at my devices, even during an interview where I'm supposed to be locked in and focused on what we're talking about. It's distracting. And the platforms are designed, their business model is focused on getting you and me and our kids addicted to these devices. And I don't have to tell you, you grab your kid's phone. The content, the things that they're seeing, what the algorithm feeds them is not just damaging, it's corrosive and harmful, particularly for young women.
Listen, I went to a speaker 2 weeks ago. Basically, just about every middle school student has seen pornography. Middle school, we're not even talking. And adolescence now is defined now at a younger age because of our bodies are changing and they're maturing. I mean, it is frightening.
Not the images. Let's just be clear. Not the images that you and I saw a generation ago.
Yeah,
it is really harmful.
So that you're doing something with the governor at 11?
Yeah, funding for school districts to help them manage. There are some. There's some devices. There's something called the Yonder Pouch, which the governor has talked about in his budget address a couple years ago, which is a pouch that you can put a phone into and lock during the day. You know, I have a pretty stern parental view of it. I just think they shouldn't be in the classroom, period. That's my personal view. I know not everybody shares that view. But I don't think you need your phone in the classroom. You need to be focused on the teacher, locked into what you're learning.
Yep. William Tong. Chris, sorry, you could stick around if you're. I mean, we're almost at the end anyway. You mind?
No.
Sorry. Do you want more questions?
No.
Okay. Let's take a quick break here at 8:46. All right, mics are getting hot here, folks. William Tong, the Attorney General here in Connecticut. Chris Vandy here from Penn Lincoln Strategies. I want to talk a couple quick things locally. Chris brought up to me that you have a couple issues at the Capitol in this session. Price gouging, ticketing. They're real consumer stuff that's still important. I mean, I think that there's nobody in our listening audience that doesn't go to some Ticketmaster-ish kind of thing and be like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, super important. Let me just say, all this national litigation stuff involving the president, if it doesn't impact Connecticut, then it's really not my problem. The reason why we're so active and so engaged is because he is doing so much harm and damage to Connecticut that I have to protect and defend Connecticut and Connecticut families. But I also have, what I was doing before Donald Trump became president, and I'm still doing, for example, price gouging, the price of eggs, right? We have to go early on Saturday morning to our local supermarket because they'll give you one dozen eggs if you buy them before 8:30 or whatever it is. And so this past Saturday, my wife and I, you know, had a duel as to who was going to put on their sweatpants and cap and go down to the supermarket and get the eggs. And during COVID, there was price gouging on eggs. And I couldn't take action because my authority is limited. The Attorney General's authority in Connecticut is limited to the immediate retailer. I don't have authority to go after the wholesaler, distributor, producer. And now people are screaming about eggs. They want me to take action, but I'm hamstrung by our law. And so I need the legislature, frankly, to cut me loose and let me go after these guys when they try to screw us on the price of eggs.
You know what I found, honestly, and because we've talked a lot, we had J.R. Rusgrove from a restaurant owner in Bristol 2 months ago talking about the egg surcharge or what have you. And I learned that wholesalers are getting more hurt than consumers because, you know, they have them over the barrel because of volume, right? And so we talked to a restaurant owner who's paying. I can go to Trader Joe's or Costco and get $5 a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying at a restaurant, they're paying $8 a dozen because they can't send eight people to Costco to get eggs. And so they're the ones, honestly, that seem to be, in anecdotal evidence, the people I talk to the wholesale level is where people, business owners, are getting hurt more than residents.
So let me help them and go up the chain from there. You know, I don't have that ability right now.
So what do they need to do? Pass a legislation that allows you to be open, widen the scope of...
Correct. To give me the same powers that New York has, Massachusetts has.
Oh, so other states do have that authority.
Definitely.
Okay. And I wanted to go over to Google for a second.
Yeah.
Because what I don't understand is how does making them divest from Chrome or from Android reduce their ability to dominate search?
So they're dominant over everything, basically. It's not just the search cases is one case. We also have a... advertising technology case. We have a geolocation case that got settled. And so this is an effort to make sure that this company doesn't dominate all aspects of our life, which it already does. And Chrome, right, is probably for many people the number one browser that they use, and search is embedded into Chrome.
But what are they doing to make that?
Oh, so many different things. You know, so if you're an advertiser and, for example, if you're WTIC and you want to highlight Brian Shachtman, if you don't play by their rules, if you don't buy through their ad suppliers, if you don't use their technology, if you don't do everything Google tells you to do, Brian Shachtman doesn't show up, not only not at the top of the searches, but he doesn't show up, you know, in the first 50 searches. And if you don't play exactly by the rules, there's no WTIC ad on the side of the browser or by the way, on your phone, which is preloaded with Chrome, right? And so you basically have no choice except to go through all these hurdles to go get another search engine loaded onto your Android that doesn't work as well as Chrome, that doesn't work as seamlessly with Google Pay, for example. And so you're totally locked in. There's what we call a competitive moat, M-O-A-T, you know, around you and me as consumers. And nobody else can get across that moat.
I'll be honest. I'm not sure that's – I knew that was how you spell moat. I thought it was M-O-T-E.
But, well, that's because – that's because the way you went to college.
Yeah, it's growing up in Ohio is different, man.
We spell it M-O-A-T in Connecticut.
Great. But, General, on the Google thing and all your – I think everything you're saying is true, but what do we do then? Because while that may be true, Chrome's product is probably the best, right? It's Google is the best search engine. We're not asking Jeeves.
Yeah,
Like, so what do? We don't want to minimize what they're really good at.
Yeah.
So how do we protect that?
I'm not sure they'd be the best if there were real competition. And what we often say in the antitrust space is if we had not gone after Microsoft a generation ago, on an antitrust basis, there would be no Google. There would be no Meta. They would have crushed them and killed them.
I think it's a great question, though, because you're like, why should they be punished for just being the best? I think the process of bullying people and not having altruistic algorithms based on that is something where I think that's obviously something that is a massive problem.
It's not illegal to be the best. It's actually not illegal to be a monopoly. People don't understand that. It's not illegal to be a monopoly. It's illegal to abuse your monopoly power to hurt your competitors.
William Tong, the Attorney General, and Chris Vandehill from Penn Lincoln Strategies. Are you involved in anything related to like artificial intelligence?
Yes.
And as it relates to IP and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I'm working closely with my fellow attorneys general. As you may know, I'm the president-elect of the National Association of Attorneys General. Right, which means I represent both Democrats and Republicans in that role. And so we do a lot of work together on AI. We're pushing Congress to broaden our authority, again, state attorneys general. Over AI, we're pushing Congress to create a real regulatory framework around artificial intelligence. You know, we're way more than a day late and a dollar short on that. So we're very active in that space.
How worried are you about this technology? Or are you not worried about it?
No, I'm really concerned about it. I'm really concerned about consumers. I'm really concerned about data privacy. You know, there's a lawsuit we have now involving a real estate company called RealPage, where they collect data about rentals, and they help basically the corporate rental landlord community collaborate and collude to set rents as high as they can possibly be. That's nothing if not AI. We talked about social media, algorithms. That's machine learning. That's nothing if not AI.
But General, how do you keep up with it, right? With the lever, we're talking about the levers in D.C. The levers in government don't move fast enough. They're designed not to move fast enough to keep up with a technology that is literally designed to be faster than everything else.
Yeah, that's a great question. I often say that litigation is not a good way to set policy.
Definitely, right.
You know, and sometimes when it gets to me, in all candor, it's late, you know, in the game.
They're in version 17.0.
Right, which is why the legislature, Roland Lamar, James Maroney, the governor, we depend on them to take action. Senator Blumenthal and I have talked a lot about AI, so we need them to take action. But as Brian said, Congress is in a tough place right now.
Yeah, we have Maroney on yesterday. I have one quick listener question, then I want to say goodbye. We only have like a minute and a half. I had a couple questions related to this. Based on all the spending conversations we have, what is your take on the legality of forgiving student loans?
I think the president has the right to forgive student loans in large part because that debt is owned by the federal government. But the Supreme Court spoke on that issue in Nebraska versus Biden. And unlike some others, we're going to follow the law. And at the end of the day, this is a huge drag on our economy. I think it's $1.5 trillion in student loans. I'm one of them.
Okay.
Me too. We're still paying them off. I'm 51 years old. And this is money that is essentially owed to the federal government that we could deploy in buying goods and services here in Connecticut and powering our economy.
I'm not in favor of the government running much, but I don't think that student loans should be a for-profit business. I don't know how to solve it, but I just think it's crazy. And I paid 8.25% on my loans until I went with 0% credit cards.
There are a lot of things that shouldn't be for-profit businesses, like Social Security. It should not be privatized.
Hey, is your family, everyone okay?
Everybody's good. Okay? Thank you very much. All I will say is, you know, as public officials, as elected officials, we sign up for a lot. I don't think we sign up for violence, but we sign up for a lot. But if someone has a problem with me, take it up with me. Leave my family out of it.
Yeah. And the truth is, like, I was raised, you know, with a Republican father, a Democrat mother, it's like at the end of the day, we all want things to be better. And you would hope that we all just have different visions to make things better. And we're all just trying to do the best we can.
We're tough.
Thank you so much, Mr. Attorney General.
Thank you.
Chris, it's good to see you, bud. It's
good to see you, too. Go Huskies.
Go Huskies. 9:30. Everyone says they're going to be asleep.
I'm going to be sound asleep.